Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast. I'm your host, Roman Perry. So it's 2019 now. Hope you guys had a wonderful holiday. Mine was really great and refreshing, and I got to just chill out and hang out with my family and see some friends. It was a good time. This episode, we have Lucas Keller, the president and founder of Milk and Honey, a hybrid music management company. They handle A&R and marketing. They represent producers and songwriters, couple DJs. Lucas is driven, and I mean, he got on Billboard 40 Under 40. That should probably tell you all you need to know about him. He's just really personable. We really got into it. This is a shorter episode, but I learned a lot. I think you're going to learn a lot. And without further ado, enjoy.
Industry Talks.
Lucas Keller.
Yes.
Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast.
Hey, glad to be here.
So you're the president of Milk and Honey.
I am.
Can you give me just like a little bit of a story about you, where you're from? I know you used to work at a company called The Collective.
Correct. I've been doing this about 15 years. I'm 34. So still very young. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Been at a variety of companies. The Collective kind of being probably one of the more famous management companies. Of the things I've done, but started as a concert promoter, grew up in punk rock bands, you know, still a guitar player, and left to start this company in 2014. So it's been 4 years, this okay. company. So we're going into our fifth year. I probably was at The Collective for 5 years. I worked for Kid Rock's old manager for like 4 years at Uppercut in Chicago. I worked for a couple of big promoters. So I've kind of been on the side of being a concert promoter, being a manager, done a lot of label related things and, you know, kind of seen all sides of the business. I've been a 3-time music publisher, about to be 4 times. We have 4 publishing companies that are run out of this office. So know the publishing business in depth as well.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a long answer to...
No, that's
short
good.
Question.
No, yeah. that's a good little answer. So Milk and Honey has been a really successful company.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah.
I'm too close to the painting. I can't see it.
I guess.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. He says that as we're in a room with all these platinum records in here.
We have 9
cool.
more coming and we haven't figured out. I like the red in the room
yeah.
and we haven't figured out where we're going to put them without covering all the walls. So
wow.
You know.
Humble brag.
First world country problems.
Yeah, exactly.
As they say.
So what are, I guess, take me through kind of what Milk and Honey is, because it's kind of a management company, but it's also a little bit more than that.
Yeah, so when I was at The Collective, I had this kind of conundrum of, I was like a kid that got walked into a company as, you know, one of 6 managers in a music department at a company that absolutely exploded in a company where, you know, on one side of me is Enrique Iglesias' manager, on the other side of me is Linkin Park's manager and Kanye West managers across the hall. And I'm like brought in by a friend and I'm being paid to be there, but I don't have any clients. So it's like, oh, okay, just go get one of those, just like that. And so I always really struggled with like finding the big artist client. And so one of the ways I really kind of made my way there was I started a writer producer department and started representing songwriters and producers and was really interested in A&R. And I still at that time was representing bands and, you know, and I, you know, it's like part of my life was managing a pop songwriter. Part of my life was, you know, was working with, you know, Stone Temple Pilots. And it's like, there's 2 very different sides of my life still, which is the artist manager and the writer producer side. But as I'm doing that, I realized that, you know, that there's this whole world of songwriter producer management and that, and just how important A&R is. And so I started signing songwriters. And so David Hodges was the first guy I represented there. Still represent him, but you know, it's been 10 years this year. And so when I left, kind of naturally having some songwriters and being in that business, I thought 2 things. One, there's a really big lane to represent songwriters and producers as managers. You know, people normally look at that as a publishing gig. But I thought there was an opportunity to do that as managers. So that's what this company really has been for 4 years is we started representing songwriters and producers. Now we represent probably about 40 people in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then it was like, we're going to use that to get back into artist management. So we'd have an artist or 2, but it wasn't until about 2 years into Milk and Honey, which is now the last 2 years being 4 years old, where we started representing artists again with the idea that we could leverage having all of these writers and producers to have an artist business and having all access to hit songs and, you know.
Yeah.
So as a company, I'd say probably 75% of our business is writers and producers. You know, when we started the company, we had just had our first song was Christina Perry, A Thousand Years. And then, you know, in that kind of within a year and change later, year and a half later, we had Nick Jonas Jealous. And right when Nick Jonas Jealous happened, that kind of spiraled into just a line of hits that really hasn't slowed down since. And so that was kind of like, you know, it just was like, okay, we should be one of the best writer producer management companies. And we'll do some artist management too. So on the artist management side, it's, you know, it's big DJs like Oliver Heldens and, you know, and guys that really, you know, that have big touring businesses, but, you know, maybe a lot of people don't realize they're as big as they are. And we probably represent about, I'd say about 15 DJs on the artist side. And a big part of what we bring to them is having A&R and having songs and having all of those songwriters and producers and mixers. So I kind of put us out there as a A&R steeped management company is really kind of what it is. And, you know, there would be no pop artist that we haven't worked with or their managers or their labels just because of the songwriter world. You know, so much of our business is just interfacing with, you know, it's kind of being a service for those people, you know, and for other artists. So people kind of get confused. They're like, well, what is it you do again? Like you don't manage Selena Gomez or Demi Lovato, but you have their hits. You're like, how does that work? You know, I have to explain that to people. It's like, well, we represent the insiders and kind of the faceless, you know, songwriters and producers on the other side of it.
I mean, it's a really great niche.
It's a super niche, and it's great because, you know, there are people that their whole business is attached to one big artist. And imagine what happens to you when you don't represent that artist anymore. You know, our business is all of these different really talented people. You know, I always say the goal in life is to be rich and not famous.
Yeah.
Because if you're rich and famous, you can't go to breakfast anymore.
Yeah.
So I represent all these people that are really rich and really talented and successful and that aren't famous.
So it's
a great thing. You know, you get, you know, representing songwriters has been a little bit of a blessing because it's like, I got a lot of guys that don't have the egos that artists have. And it's just a great business to be in. And we get to, you know, have hits with all of these big contemporary artists without having to like run around the world with the egos that go into representing X big female pop star. You know?
Yeah. It's definitely like a whole different vibe. You know, because I don't think you can get to that big artist, like famous artist standpoint unless you do have that ego tied to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, as long as you're not a dick, you know what I mean? I think it's just part of it. And
that's what it is.
Working with it is just something, it's just they're an artist. That's what they do.
Yeah.
You know? So it's definitely cool to be.
We're definitely representing the adults in town, you know?
Yeah. No offense to anybody, but it's like just the people that are like, this is my craft.
Yeah.
I go into a studio, I do this.
Yep.
That's what it does.
Yep.
That's great. That's a really great niche to be in.
Totally.
You know? What would you say that is like the thing that you're proudest of with Milk and Honey so far? Like if there's one particular thing, or is it just
I'm always going to have the same answer for this. I hope I keep this answer. Being independent.
Okay.
This is just the punk rock side of me. I'm not owned by anyone. I have no investors. I got a big credit line at the bank. I don't have any, I don't have to answer to anyone. And we keep a great kind of liberal culture around here where nobody feels like they have like a boss where, you know, beyond the fact that they do technically have a boss, but it's like, you know, it's pretty relaxed and it's like, we just don't have people here if they aren't self-starters and motivated. And so I don't really have people that feel like they're employees here. And it's just kind of like it's a really good,
like, you know, it's culture. Almost like a flat.
It's style. It's a very good culture. I mean, people work really hard here and I don't have to motivate them to do it because everybody has a lot of upside to do so. So I just think that it's a really great time to kind of be a mid-sized management company because everybody's been rolled up into these bigger companies. Everybody's sold. Everybody has some investor outside of the music business that they hate that doesn't understand their business. So I feel really lucky that it's like when I started the company, I was young enough where I still am, still could do it, but it's like, I was young enough where it's like, you know, I didn't need to do all the things that people feel like they need to do in LA. Everybody, this is a problem about being in Hollywood, is everybody needs to, like, there's a portion of your money you make that is just to go ball out. You got to go buy the sports car and you got to do this and that. I didn't feel like I needed to do that. So I was like, I had a couple big clients and I was like, I'm going to take all the money and just reinvest it into the company. And that served me well. It allowed me to not have to go get the investor and get all the kind of outside help. So that's what I like the most, because we get to make decisions that benefit the company and that are based really around like what we know, right? Like if I had somebody that was telling me what to do, there'd be all kinds of like clients that are like we have writers and producers that are going to, and DJs that are going to be, we think are going to be huge by the end of 2019, or that we've seen an uptick in commission and revenue and success that they're having, that somebody would tell me like, yeah, what do you have that guy around for? So like, we're just glad to not have to, you know.
You're not answering to anybody.
Yeah, we don't answer to anyone. You're
calling your own plays and stuff and, like that.
And to that end, if a guy that works here has an idea for a new business or a new, you know, it's something we can do with a client, so something we can go create, we can do it. You know,
yeah.
We're not being told what to do and not do. So I think that's what I'm most proud of. I guess second to that is just, you know, the people we have and the success that we've been able to, you know, have, which is really super rewarding, because it's like the music business has a really high failure rating. So,
yeah.
You know, it's tough.
That actually leads me to another question is, so you represent a lot of writers and producers, and I'm sure that there are some that you sign that will succeed more than others, and sure, some that you sign that maybe kind of fall away. What are the biggest, maybe like, give me examples of like some of the traits or qualities of the people that succeed, and then maybe some traits and qualities of the people that kind of...
It's a difficult thing to accept, right? You want everyone to be successful. I always say some people are going to die on the Mayflower on the way to the new world. It's just what it is, you know? We don't look at our talent that way, but it's, you know, the things that you would see, if I'm answering the question properly, that in the ones that are successful, there's a few things. One, it's people's kind of connection to culture. So if you're 40 years old and you're a perennial successful hit-making songwriter or producer, you have to be listening to, you have to be in the culture of kind of what kids are listening to. And you can't have a 40 or 50-year-old perspective of what kids are listening to. So, you know, you don't have to be, I haven't had this conversation with David Hodges, but, you know, David's turned 40 this year. I don't know what he thinks of Juice WRLD. You know, I don't know that he would be really excited about Juice WRLD, but it would be his job to understand it. You know, we're both Sting fans, so we have to understand that Juice WRLD single, and we have to understand why that works. You know, I think that if we at 40 years old can't figure that out, we're in trouble. So I think having a connection to kind of, you know, people that are listening to music and culture, I think is important. The second thing is just being able to always kind of go back to the well after any success. We don't represent people that hit their glass ceiling. We're not the guys that want to represent people for their one hit. I've never cared about anyone's one hit, because the truth is, when you're running a business, we've got three offices, we're about to have four offices, you have a certain expense where it's like, it's crazy to think one hit song doesn't actually change my life. One hit song gets Milk and Honey further down the road. It changes my life, and it might get me another client. It puts that client back on top perceptually, yeah, and it allows us to keep running our business a certain way.
You're in the business of hit songs.
But we're in the business of hit songs. Yeah. Our success has been able to have multiple of them. And that's the kind of revenue and success that changes your life. One hit song does actually change one guy's life, but it doesn't change a manager's life. So for us, we have to represent guys that we believe are perennial hit makers. You know, a lot of times when we're going to sign people and it's really competitive, I think they feel like, you know, it's like maybe they've just had a big hit song and they feel like we, you know, we're kind of encroaching on the revenue from that one hit song. And it's like, well, not really. You know, it's like, we believe that you're someone that can do that, and we want to be a part of you doing it again, because we don't get any credit for the hit that you've had, you know, if we're not representing you. So, so I think that's a big element is people being able to, like, people we believe are going to be perennial and continually be able to do it, you know, and again, yeah, and again. And I think to be able to do that, you have to put all of your laurels aside and all of your, you know, kind of, that I actually have a couple big clients that won't put record plaques on the wall. There's this one client, Sir Nolan, that I represent, is this way. He gets a record plaque and I think he gives it to his mother or father. He's always gifting them. I'm like, why do you do that, man? And he's like, he's like, then I just wake up and I look at like this like wall of fame and I subconsciously buy into that I'm this guy. And he's like, I can't do that. And he's like, that's ridiculous, you know, which I really appreciate. You know, I think that so your ability to kind of just go back to being, hey, I'm just a normal guy that knows how to do this, I think is really important.
Like that craft. Like it's that's
what and then I guess the third thing is I represent a lot of really musical guys. You know, I mean, like really great, you know, like Oak Felder is an amazing, you know, David Hodges, Jamie Hartman, like these are like super musical guys, you know, that really know how to sit down and play instruments, you know. That's the most important to me. I can't represent any hacks. Like I can't represent anyone that's like, I get in the room and I direct traffic and I creating a vibe. And I don't know what any of that means. I need guys that can sit down at keys, sit down at guitars, you know, go throw the backing vocals, even if they're, you know, going to be pitched up. And even if they're not a good singer, like really musical people.
Get their hands dirty.
Those are people that, you know, like songwriters, you know, that's really important to me. So I think there are guys in town for sure that have hits that didn't really do anything in the room, but that is the guys that have repeated hits are not the guys that are not musical guys. I've rarely ever seen it. There's plenty of hustlers, but they usually have a hit and a half. They're not the guys that are like the guys that have sold, you know, like David Hodges has probably sold 70 million records now. He hasn't done that on accident as a guy that doesn't actually make music, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's another thing is that you got to represent guys that aren't frauds, you know, and guys that are really great, great writers.
Yeah.
So those are the three things I think I see in successful people.
What about the ones that are unsuccessful? I mean, maybe the opposite of those three things is...
Yeah, guys with bad habits, you know, like people that don't turn in their music, people that don't finish records, people that, you know, I think are, you know, what David would always say to me, he's like, I work with people where it's not a long day. He's like, and you know, you think about it, you're getting in from 12 noon to 6 PM. That's on the shortest session you're doing is 12 to 6. It's a full work day that you're spending with somebody. If it's not going well by the first hour, that's a long day.
Yeah.
So you stop writing with people that kind of create and turn into a long day because it's lots of our guys will write songs and maybe they're not hit songs. And maybe it's a good song, but it was a good day, you know? And I think that's the most important thing to keeping gas in the tank for these guys and keeping them inspired is making sure that they're collaborating with people that, you know, that make it a good, you know, make it a good experience. So I think people, you have to collaborate with people where it's you know that you at least do good work with. Sorry, I don't know if that's answering the question.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, what was the question? What's the question again?
I was like, what are the biggest kind of the people that kind of just don't succeed?
Oh, sorry. So the reason I brought that up is the guys that don't...
Guys and girls, I should say.
Sorry, I'm just saying...
It's okay. Guys and girls.
Exactly.
Neutral guys.
Many amazing, talented female songwriters in the business, for sure. But, you know, the people that... There's people that, even if they're not having hits, but they're successful songwriters, people still want to work with them. They never rule them out. And the reason is because they created a reputation for themselves where it's like they show up, they do good work, they're committed, they turn in their songs... You know, and so that I think keeps you in your kind of, you know, if your career is peaks and valleys, that keeps you relevant and going, right? Is that you were a solid statesman. And I think it's the people that don't do that, you know, that end up being off the list. But it's just, you know, it's the hustlers and the short-sighted kind of opportunists. And the good thing is we find out who those people are pretty quickly. Like, and we can also look at a song. Like I can look at a song and see who the writers are. And for the most part, we can, after a period of doing this long enough, we can kind of tell you who did what in the room.
Right.
You just have an idea. It's like, okay, this guy contributed. This guy showed up 2 hours late and didn't do anything. This guy kind of did something, you know, like you have an idea kind of based on the names.
Really?
Yeah. And so I think, you know, it's really all about, you know, establishing your reputation because it's a small town and a small business and everybody learns kind of who you are and what your reputation is within a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
So maybe going on the business side of things,
yeah.
What are some qualities that you look for when you're hiring somebody to work at Milk and Honey?
Yep.
Like on the A&R side?
I need people that are obsessed with the business and people that, you know, people have to present a certain way. So it's like, I need people that I can put in meetings. There's definitely people that started this company and when they're kind of, we're developing them, whether they were interns or whether they're my assistant or whatever it was, like people that I probably couldn't put in a meeting right away, that a couple of years later I could send off into a meeting.
Right.
You know, the general manager of this company was my intern at the company before this. So, I mean, it's been great to kind of develop some people. And so I really, I think I really look for people that I think that I can independently send out there and, you know, put into meetings. People have to kind of function as mini CEOs here. You know, people have to really be focused on running their own business, even though they're kind of inside Milk and Honey. So, people have to really care about this business. It can't be like clocking in and clocking out. So it's like, you have to want to be a manager and manage talent and have hits. And like, that has to be your lifeblood. Otherwise it's not a great gig, you know, for anyone, because there's huge upside to be a manager, but it's like any business that it's hard to get into, you know, and it's really hard to set up a business. You know, my brother sells life insurance for Northwestern Mutual. And I think it's like the only harder job is like going out and trying to get people to buy life insurance. It's like, you know, there's a huge amount of people that don't make it past the first 2 years of that business because they can't get their like first 200 clients. This business isn't unlike that. And that it's like, you're going out and you're selling music to people. There's a lot of music. It's a lot more music than ever. I mean, there's an actual, from 1990 forward, if you looked at that in a snapshot, there's an actual exponential growth of the amount of music. So much so that we look at New Music Friday and see 110 songs and we're just like,
it's all new.
How do you?
You never heard any of these people.
Yeah. Well, we hear a lot of them, but it's like, I'm sure you do. It's all new. Yeah. It's all new music, but it's like, what do I focus on?
Yeah.
So I think to be able to cut through that, I think you have to be able to figure out, okay, how do I balance the really important balance in life of how am I focused?
Yeah.
And I guess you got to be focused on trying to break these acts and break these songwriters. You can't take on too many things, but you have to have enough of them where it's like, you know, you can't put all of your eggs in the one basket and say, this is going to be the guy, because chances are it's going to be that guy.
So right.
You got to manage a few things. And so it takes a lot of diligence working here to be able to focus on building a business. Most managers here are working on over 5 projects, you know, so that requires a lot of, you know, just balancing and putting service first. I think being a great manager, you know, at this company or any management company is putting clients first, you know, and putting service first.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's January.
Yes.
Last month of 2018.
The 13th month.
The 13th
That's right.
month. What were your biggest takeaways from 2018?
Biggest takeaway is we're really good at what we do, but we're also super lucky.
Okay.
And it takes a modest person with humility to admit the luck that goes into success. But if I have any strategy, like the only advice, like anyone who's not completely full of shit can ever get you is the harder I work, the luckier I become.
Yeah.
That is the biggest, most true piece of advice in business or in pursuit of anything.
Yeah.
There's no other thing that someone can tell you or any secret sauce. Like, yes, there are lots of things we know that I think other companies don't know, things that we know how to do that other people don't. If I'm going to sit down and try to sign somebody, I'm going to sell them on all those things. But the truth is, you know, when we had 9 songs at once in the top 40 last year, it's because we represent 50 people and they're all really talented and they're all working with all different people all year. And so now, you know, it's like when you have X amount of songs on the chart, or we had, I think, 7 Grammy nominations or whatever, like it's because we've, you know, tried a lot of things.
Yeah.
We're willing to try a lot of things. We're not going to manage 5 people. We're just not going to do that as a company. So it's through a lot of trial and error and trying things and trial and error with those clients. Like, you know, should we work with this artist, work with that writer? You know, there's a lot of moving pieces of Milk and Honey at once that allow all of those things to kind of coalesce at one time. I think the takeaway from 2018 is we got really lucky, but it's a bird in hand, and we have to really, 2019, we have to, you know, step it up and do better. And I think as artist managers, it's going to take another 3 years for the world to really see us as like powerhouse artist managers. But I think as writer producer managers, 2019 is the year to really just to take the business, you know. I could say competitively, truth is there's probably about 15 other real people in that space in North America, maybe the world. And they're all friends of ours and they all do great business. And if you're happily managed by them, you probably wouldn't come here. If you're happy here, you wouldn't go there.
Of course. I mean, there's room enough for everybody.
Totally. But there's nobody else in the world that's growing in terms of staff and volume and resources for our clients than milk and honey.
Right.
There's a really famous company called AAM that are great producer managers, and they've been doing it for about 30 years and have really kind of paved the way for a lot of what we're doing. And there's a couple other people in that space that kind of came before us. But I think next to them, I don't think there's anyone that, you know, is doing it kind of on our level and it's staff size and kind of volume. So our thing really this year is to just make sure we corner that space.
Definitely. Because it seems like you guys are doing almost what like a label would be doing for like in the A&R side of things and representing artists and producers.
We're doing a lot of A&R. Yeah. The A&R is really with the writers and producers. Yeah. It's getting them a lot of those artist sessions. Again, it's that kind of confusing thing where people are like, well, you don't work at Capitol Records and you don't A&R that artist, but you said you have their hits or you represent the guys that make the hits. Like, I can't tell you the amount of times that we pitch the song, we put the room together. If I just erased this company from existence, like this never happened, tons of songs don't exist.
Right.
Now, there's lots of people, we have lots of hits with clients where we didn't set it up, we had nothing to do with it, or someone else pitched the song, so we didn't have to deal with it. But, you know, if you believe in the butterfly effect, there's just so many things kind of controlled by this company.
Right.
As it relates to just the A&R, you know. So after we started doing it for a while, we really started getting closer with the labels. We're viewed as a trusted, you know, that's something I always wanted. People want success, they want money, they want all these things, right. Hits and record sales, but you really want respect from your peers. So, you know, I think we're now kind of viewed amongst the labels as a reputable company where people would be like, okay, yeah, you know, they have great writers and we're always going to get great, you know, great songs from them.
So I did a little research.
Sure.
And you said that you can't be a cell phone manager in 2018.
Right.
And I'm wondering...
All my cell phone manager friends probably hate that I said that.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, what is a cell phone manager? And, like, what do you mean by not being able to be a cell phone manager?
I think that there's a time in your life where you have to do that. Like, if I had gotten a real job sooner, I may not have been as much of a self-starter or as kind of learned so many things just by reading or by, you know, kind of learning on my own. But I really think that it wasn't until I went into the collective that I realized, like, oh... Like there's all these resources and like doing it as a team and it takes a village and just kind of how much better it is to do. You know, I would have made infinitely more money had I not set this company up and done it on my own. But I'm also smart enough to know I wouldn't have had a fraction of the success because we have a whole team working here.
Right.
So this was the only way to do it on our level. There was no way for me and an assistant to do this.
Right.
So I think it's hard. Two reasons. One, you know, if you're managing a big artist, or a variety of big writers or producers, just to even have the time and bandwidth to do it as one person on your cell phone, I think it's really difficult.
Right.
And you know, I take it very seriously that we want to maximize the service we're giving to people. So I don't want to shortchange anyone. Even though we represent all of those clients, everybody's getting full attention. It takes a lot of work to be able to do that. If you're just managing a big artist by yourself and you have no other staff or help, you're shortchanging them somehow. It's just a fact. There's only so many hours in the day. A lot of guys don't want to invest in resources. They don't want to build a company. I understand why people don't want to build a company. It's a whole racket of other problems and HR things and things that kind of come in. But it's just, it takes a team. And I think the second thing, which a lot of people don't talk about, is the security element for a manager, which is, you know, your clients get to a certain point of success. And then bigger managers come around and they come calling and it's important to build, you know, a friend told me once, you got to build a castle with a moat around it. You know, you have to have a company that's perceived with a certain kind of gravitas and respect where people aren't just trying to like pull things off of you. Cause there's definitely managers, cell phone managers specifically, in my opinion, guys where it's like they would lose client after client as they kind of got to a certain place because the guy from Live Nation comes along and it's like, it's hard to say no. So yeah. I think it's important to build a perception as a company, you know, where people, you know, where you have a certain amount of respect and a lot of that comes from having resources.
Yeah, definitely. Cause I feel like in this day, kind of going back to what I said about offering the label services is like to be independent in the industry, you have to do everything that a label would do 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to handle all your merch, like getting all your, if you're going to press CDs, you got to handle pressing whoever's
you're
pressing
the youngest
CDs
guy I've still, heard say press CDs.
Hey, you got to make money somehow. Totally. You know, when you're touring and stuff, you got to sell something.
I mean, listen, you're as a management company, these are the services you're expected to have as an artist management company. You're supposed to maybe have in-house radio.
Yeah.
That's become an important thing. DSP, so people that are doing digital services and working with Apple Music and Spotify and all that. So you're supposed to have digital people, digital content people, and people to do social media.
Yeah.
You're expected to have a tour marketing guy. You know, you're supposed to, you're expected to have great logistical, like day-to-day managers. You're expected to have a brand person, you know, to bring in brand deals. You're expected to have a sync licensing person for TV, film, ad, and gaming sync. There's probably some other things I'm not thinking of, but, you know, when you look at the fact that those salaries don't get billed back to the artist,
yeah,
that's supposed to come out of your 15 or 20% commission. You know, it's why management companies are really staffed up. It's kind of a little bit of be careful what you wish for managers, because managers always want to control. And then as things change with the labels, there was more expected of the managers. So we kind of got what we wanted, but now we're expected to kind of staff up and have all of these costs and services. And again, so the cell phone manager doesn't have that team.
Yeah.
And so you're expected to augment whatever the label doesn't bring. And labels historically do a great job when you're having a hit. And when you're not having hits, somebody's got to pick up the slack, because yeah, there's big careers that rely around for these artists that aren't necessarily, that are maybe in between a hit, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of business there.
Definitely.
So,
and I feel like maybe in the 80s, labels were willing to offer those kind of like those valleys, like helping you through those yep, valleys. Like you always hear about Bruce Springsteen didn't have a hit till his like second or third album or yeah, something like that.
He really built on the road. Bruce was, yeah, you know, like he built on the road and
yeah, like it's doubtful for me to see a label to stick by somebody like that.
Yeah.
Through
I think also
trough,
there's a lot to say about who's I think is one of the great managers is John Landau, who managed Bruce, like still manages him. You know, it's like if you're John, if you're the record label, I don't know how many labels Bruce had, but maybe Bruce was on five different labels in his career.
Yeah.
There actually were more than three major labels back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're John Landau, you have to stick by Bruce in the good and the bad times, you know.
Definitely.
And sticking by Bruce in the bad times probably means he's playing 10,000 seaters instead of 30,000 seaters.
Right.
I mean, it's being a manager is not a rough gig. If you have big clients.
If you have Bruce Springsteen as a
that's
client,
right, yeah,
it's
yeah,
a pretty good client to have.
It's a great client.
Any Super Bowl clients probably.
Those are
probably good ones.
Those are great ones. Yeah,
definitely. So let's do this. We're going to do this question.
Okay.
So industry in 2018
yep,
versus how the industry is going to shift. Cause every 6 to 18 months, depending on
I'm
who
totally
you're
fine
asking
with this question, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Like how do you see things shift? Like how are you seeing things, anything bubbling up in the last 12, 13 months?
I think that I'm more excited than ever about new artists.
Okay.
And our ability, I mean, look, just for this company, our ability, not to just make it about the company, but our ability to kind of introduce new artists through our writers and producers and
right,
kind of their connection, kind of deep connection as hit makers with major labels. So I think we have a real path as a company to break artists, you
yeah,
know, now, which I'm excited about. But, you know, there is this really annoying buzzword, disintermediation, which is a long word. Disintermediation basically is us referring to kind of cutting out the middleman, you know, and so we have distributors now we can go through. We don't need the major label. You know, we can go direct to our fans.
Yeah.
I think that's something people have seen for 20 years and maybe has been a kind of a concept that's been a bit ahead of its time. A lot of management companies kind of thought that was coming sooner than it was, but I think we're truly in an age of disintermediation where we don't need, you know, instead of maybe doing the deal with, you know, with Sony or Universal or Warner, you can do a deal with AWOL or Empire or one of these like really amazing distribution services. I think like anything, you have to have fans and audience. If you can focus on building fans and audience, whether that's online or on tour, usually probably both, then you can go work with one of those companies and you don't need the major label deal. And it's not just about terrestrial radio. And so there's so many kind of different ways, I think, to slice and dice an artist's career trajectory now that I think the fact that those things are available to us now and they weren't 5, 10 years ago is exciting. So that to me is kind of the next wave is artists being able to go direct to fans, use distribution services. You know, we're in a completely digital era now, so it's not about the CD, right?
Yeah.
So it's like being able to put a song up. You know, we had a song that was not, it's a big song coming out next Friday, and it just, it got messed up and it didn't sound right. And my producer was able to like swap out the audio last night. We never would have been able to swap out a delivery 6 days in advance of a release In the past, that would have never happened.
Everything already would have been pressed.
So it's just a different, the deliveries are different. Your ability to drop music faster. Also where the business is going is like, there's more power with the managers. So if you have a great manager who can either navigate the major label systems or set up your own plan, I think this is the best time. Our managers have had more control than they've ever had. So, I think there's going to continue to be, more and more music, but I think that, the business is protected by great, that there's going to only be so many things on New Music Friday that are really great.
Yeah.
And, the artists that figure out, oh, it's not just about one song on New Music Friday, but how do I have a song every fourth New Music Friday? How do I come with 12 singles in a year? Or, artists and managers that can figure that thing out.
Getting content out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really important. So, I just see a better, kind of a better future for doing it independently, which I think is everybody is. I wouldn't take anything away from the major labels. It's still for our business, representing writers and producers, they lead the business, and they break our hits. If the labels went out of business, we go out of business.
Right.
But as artist managers on that side of our business, things have
democratized.
Things have really changed. I think it's changing a lot for what, there used to be kind of a one lane highway of kind of how an artist would release music and get on the radio, and it's just completely changing.
Yeah. Cause I picture too, it's funny that you talked about like relying on luck kind of thing. Cause that's something I've been thinking about, is like figuring out the ways that you can just minimize luck. Like, how can you minimize your reliance? Cause there's always going to be the variable, and like, how can you minimize that? Whereas back, in the 90s or the early 2000s, you'd have to be lucky that somebody would see you perform, like an A&R would see you perform, and then you'd get it. But now you can just perform on YouTube and build a fan base through the internet. Anybody can do that. You can build a fan base in Minnesota.
I probably downplay the amount of things that we do here that helps an artist or writer producer jump the line.
Yeah.
Just through relationships we have.
Yeah.
So
it still helps.
There are things we do with clients that make it so much better than being like in a dorm room in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Definitely.
But it's definitely, it's like I said, it's the best time to just partner with a great manager.
Yeah.
That can help you kind of do a lot of those things.
Cause it also means too, those sort of gatekeeping and bridging those gaps does even more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause it's cool. You have this skill set. We're going to actually help you. You have this tool set.
Yep.
We're going to help you as a management company take the most advantage of it. And this guy can help you with this, and this girl can help you with this.
Yep.
It's really just a great, amazing time.
Yeah. I think it definitely is.
Yeah. So we're getting close. We're in the last like 15 minutes right now.
That's fine. Yep.
If you say you got abducted by aliens.
Okay.
Tonight.
Yes.
And you have, or like as soon as you leave, they're picking you up. It's like, we're going to
Likely
Andromeda.
Story.
Taking you to Andromeda. We're going. What are the three pieces of advice that you would leave for the world, or maybe just the industry itself? What are your final three as a billboard?
What's that thing you
40?
See around town on billboard? Stop making stupid people famous. I don't know. Three pieces of advice, that I leave for the industry. That's a tough question. I can't tell, is that just for the business as a whole, or is that for someone getting into the business?
However you would want to interpret it.
I don't know if there's three. I think the one I could think of is, just to make sure that we're, it's going to sound so cliche, but just to make sure that we're like preserving great art, because we're definitely headed in a place, I think, with a lot of music, and this will make me sound old, where it's like, we're definitely getting away from that. And I think, it's fine if we lose the album on a lot of artists, but let's not lose great art. And I think, and let's not lose kind of the platform for those artists to get through, because I think there's always going to be a lot of kind of noise, in all different genres of music that's just not great.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because some of it really cuts through and becomes successful, it kind of messes up the bell curve, And I think that's something that, at least for so much of what I do on a daily basis is just business, and you could end up getting really far away from the art, but I'm not. There are certain artists that I look at and I'm like, that's that's why we still do this, you know, because that artist exists, you know.
Definitely.
So, and I think that's like, you know, without kind of going into proper nouns and, you know, mentioning, you know, artists, like there's like when Ed Sheeran happens or Childish Gambino happens, it's just like, oh, okay, like there's great, you know, there's still great out there, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I won't mention the other artists on the other side of that where it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, it'll be people that become successful due to novelty.
Right.
As opposed to like,
correct,
great art.
But there's a lot of novelty having a lot of success right now.
Yeah.
It's definitely frustrating. Again, my job is to understand it, not to criticize it.
Yeah.
But it gets a little nauseating sometimes. Yeah.
But I think sometimes though, like novelty kind of ends up creating new standards for great art.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of, I think of like, you know, the EDM, the big EDM boom, you sure. represent a lot of EDM yeah. artists.
Yep.
There's a lot of artists that came out of the EDM boom that ended up making really, really great
totally.
Art.
And I'm not saying they don't, like, I'm not saying the dance stuff, there's a yeah. lot of great songs.
Right.
You know, I heard, there's this kid named Sam Fender, who's like a really buzzed UK artist right now.
And yeah.
Our client Rich Costi is working on the record, and he's kind of got like a Gaslight Anthem meets The Killers type of thing going on. I was listening to the records and emailed him the other night. I was like, man, this kid's so good. And I was listening to this song and I was like, God, this song's amazing. And then I was like, why? I feel like I've heard it. And it was Waiting for Love from Avicii.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I was close with a lot of the people that were involved with Avicii. And so I was like, oh, wow. Like, I remember that song. But it's a piano vocal version of that song.
Yeah.
And I realized, I'm like, a lot of these dance songs are like really amazing copyrights. They're not just the four on the floor. You know, I'm at EDC,
yeah.
you know, dance songs. So not to take away from a lot of the music kind of in the genre, but you know, it's safe to say like most people haven't written Hotel California in the, right. in the EDM genre.
Yeah. You know? But if so. You can, I feel like with songs, like if you can write a good song and the songs, it doesn't matter what genre that song gets placed into,
right.
it'll be good. It'll be, if it works as a guy singing on a piano, it could probably work as a rock and roll song, or it
right.
could probably work as an EDM song, or it could probably work as like the hook for a hip hop song.
Right.
You yeah. know, it doesn't matter how it's just the context. That's where the novelty comes in, I think, is where the yep. context and the genre, but if a good song is a good song,
yep.
you know, so if somebody can play it.
On that is really, really what it is in is the chorus and the hook, you know, I mean,
yeah.
it really is about a hook, not to turn this into like a hip hop conversation, but
yeah.
I mean, it's like when you look at dance music, and you look at even great songs, it is about a hook, you know, and,
yeah.
and popular music in general. Yeah,
definitely. That's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I see the 80s hair metal stadium
yep.
anthem hooks.
My favorite.
I always felt like, you know, sort of the big room EDM stuff had so much in common with
totally
those, except instead of a guitar solo, it's a drop.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
But it all is the same vibe.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't change.
A lot of similarity between Def Leppard and Avicii. And,
hell yeah. You know.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, I think that's what transcends genres and time periods and, you know, is in, again, you see that when somebody takes an old song and it gets covered or repurposed.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, this yeah. was really good.
Awesome.
I'm glad I got to sit down and talk to you for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, pleasure. No, it's great to talk.
Cool. So that's our show. We got a lot of big things in the works for 2019, so stay tuned. Make sure you follow us on Instagram @IndustryTalksOfficial, @INDTalks on Twitter. Our website is industrytalks.net. In case you want to reach me, I am @RomanPerryMusic on both Twitter and Instagram. Shout out to Morgan for helping me out with the edit. She's also going to be helping us stay on a little bit of a tighter schedule this year than last year. And that's all we have today. Thanks for listening.